We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Live from the Bryant and Stratton College Athletic Studio.
Listen up, people!
On Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Chuck and Winkler served up by Perkins Restaurant and Bakeries. I'm Bart Winkler. That is Chuck Freeman. Weekend number one of the NCAA tournament complete. We'll talk what happened with the Badgers and what's next. 7:35 with Ben Wergel. We'll talk Marquette. 9:20 with Ben Steele. And we'll talk more about that with you guys throughout the show. But a weekend that, you know, Bucks fans maybe never thought would happen. Certainly Marcus Johnson was at the point where he didn't think it would happen. But his number eight officially retired yesterday at Fiserv Forum. Good weekend for the Bucks, beating up on the Heat on Friday night, 116-87, beating up on the Cavs, 127-105. Tony Snell to get banged up, very swollen ankle, so we'll find out the word on him. Also, Paul Gasol will not play the rest of the regular season, so just more injuries to the team, which we can talk about a little later, too. But the Marcus Johnson stuff, Chuck, I know that he's been a favorite of yours for a long time. This was a long time coming. And now, finally, the number eight hangs up there in the rafters at Fiserv.
Yeah, I mean, it was a long time coming. I don't know how Herb Cole and that ownership did not put him in all those years. If you look at all the offensive categories, Marcus Johnson's name's right up there in all of them. And, you know, he was on some real good teams. The Bucks didn't win any NBA titles. I don't know if previous ownership had a problem with him because he had a little drug issue, okay, that he overcame. All right, but and they traded him in 1984. I did not think that was a good move. He had a back issue toward the end of his career, but he's a five-time All-Star. He was, second-team All-Pro when he played with the Bucks. Okay, only a couple of guys ever were first-team All-Pro, and Marcus and Kareem was one of them. But he had such good years with the Bucks, and all those teams that would win 55 and 60 games. Teams that we would die to have here in Milwaukee, and now hopefully do. But how Marcus Johnson, his jersey was not retired, and this is nothing new that I've said before, is reprehensible until yesterday. I'm glad. I mean, new ownership has done a lot of good things. And this, finally retiring and bringing Marcus Johnson back into the Bucks family, where they have shunned him for 30 years, is one of the many good things that they've done.
And this was kind of an effort, at least according to Marcus Johnson, that was spearheaded by the team president, Peter Fagan.
Booing my family. Wow. Terrible.
No, nobody's booing you, Peter. We're excited. We're happy. Yeah. Where he reached out to Marcus, he tried to bring him back here. Wanted to play this, a good story that Marcus told about when he first came to Milwaukee. They were like saying, hey, come back. We want you to do the TV stuff. And he's like, I don't want to do this. And they said, why don't you just come back and give it a test run and see how it goes. And Marcus told the story yesterday.
You know, my initial reaction was like, I haven't been to Milwaukee in over 30 years on a consistent basis. The last time I was there, I believe, was for the 40th year anniversary in 2000. I just don't, you know, the cold and all the winter, it's been too long. People don't know anything or remember anything about what we did and I just don't want to do that, you know. And so I said, but I will go out there and meet with some of the people who were executives at Fox Sports and some of the Bucks executives at the time. Jim and I did an audition tape at the Bradley Center. First thing happened at the Hyatt Hotel. When I checked in there, I went across the street to George Webb's to get something to eat. And the cook behind the counter was like, Marcus Johnson, man, we ain't seen you in 30 years, man. My parents were your biggest fans. Can I call them up to come get an autograph? I'm like, oh, yeah, sure, that's fine. Yeah, okay. I said, okay, they do remember a little bit. So son, parents came down. We talked for a bit. Went over to Bradley, and there was some workmen cleaning up the venue. And walked in there, and they were like, Marcus Johnson, baby, you coming back home, man? We ain't seen you, but you coming. What, you can go come back home? So my, you know, my initial thought was like, yeah, the Bucks probably planted these guys. No. this is a setup. I thought maybe later, but at that time I was just blown away. And I walked in there, and when they said that, I was like, well, I don't know, maybe. And then Jim and I did our audition deal, and we clicked and had a lot of fun, and just about a five to seven, maybe 10 minute little audition monitor watching a game that had been played, and that seemed to be good. And then they offered me the job, and it's like, man, it just seemed right.
You know, and that's one of the things too that he was concerned about, or just wondering about, was does Milwaukee remember me? And there's a large amount of people that root for the Bucks to this day. I mean, he was out of town before I was born. I was born that same year. I look up at the rafters. The Bucks now have, what, 9 retired numbers?
Yeah, they were retiring like they were going out of style back
in the
80s.
I didn't watch any of these guys play live.
Yeah.
It is good for the ownership. That's another good part of this whole jersey retirement, is it's giving guys that, when we think of the Bucks, I mean, what's the greatest highlight in the Bucks for my life? Losing in 2001, playing some series with the Pacers, Brandon Jennings saying Bucks in 6 and then getting swept, and then Giannis. So when you think of the Bucks for me, it's like the 90s were bad, the 2000s were worse, and then now they're finally getting some relevance. But there's this whole time in the 80s and then in the 70s, and they won a title that a lot of my generation knows very little about, has not seen. And so if anything, this Marcus Johnson thing is not just a great honor for him, but it's a good way to, I guess, teach us about the franchise that was here before a lot of us were born.
Yeah, and I get that. I mean, I think you probably got to be upper 40s and higher to have seen Marcus play with the Bucks.
And those that did see him play have to think that it's awesome.
Yeah, that was me. You know, I grew up watching Marcus, and then later on covered him as a member of the media. But yeah, all those names on the rafters there, the Junior Bridgmans, the Bob Laniers, the Sidney Moncriefs. I mean, those were all part of those late 70s, early 80s Bucks teams. Teams that people loved, man. Going into the arena, you couldn't get a ticket to the Milwaukee Arena. 11,052 every night, no matter who they played. It was tough to get a ticket, man. If you had Bucks tickets back in the 80s, it was like, man, you were living large, man, because they were tough to come by. And, I mean, seeing Marcus finally get his jersey retire, a long time coming, but that guy was a great player. And when Junior Bridgman mentioned, was comparing him to Larry Bird and comparing him to Julius Erving, yes, Marcus was right there with those great players, man. He was every bit as impressive and talented as any of those guys. The Bucks, he was one of the best players in the NBA. I mean, 1 year he averaged 25.6 points a game, and he was, I think, second team All-Pro, second year in the league. And he just, I mean, he was the best player on one of the best teams in the NBA for a good 7, 8, 9 years.
I'm learning more about the Bucks in the 70s and 80s now than I ever have the rest of my life. And when you first kind of figure out about a team and you think, well, are they good? And now the Bucks aren't that good, but hey, they won a championship in 1971. Do I go and, I mean, the Bucks under Herb Cole didn't seem to care too much about that. So
no,
why should I?
No.
And think of all that the new ownership has done to recognize their previous history. Like, it seems to me, just from afar, that Herb Cole's, like, focused on the then and now, whereas you have this ownership group that came in, and Peter Fagan, the president, and they look at what they're buying into, and they think, well, wait a minute. We were one of the most highly respected franchises for a decade and a half. Why are we not talking about this? They have made alternate jerseys to represent the Mecca floor. They went back and played a game at the building where they used to play when they were that good. And so you had this entire ownership period from Herb Cole where it was always 8-seed or bust. Let's change the jerseys. Let's be purple. And then now you've got this group that's like, hey, why don't we like pay more attention to when we were very, very good? And I think that's neat.
Yeah. I mean, even though they didn't win any NBA titles in the Marcus Johnson years, in 71, I was 4 years old. That was a different era. That was with Kareem. So I don't remember that either. But I remember from 77 on up. And, yeah, I mean, yeah, they didn't win any NBA titles. with Marcus Johnson and those teams from the 70s, late 70s, early 80s. But they captured the city. Everybody loved the team because they were one of the best teams in the NBA. And I've told it many times that they, you know, always ran into Dr. J in Philadelphia or Larry Bird in the Celtics and couldn't get by. But they had always, they were always a second or third seed in the Eastern Conference and get the 55 and 60 wins and winning a division title when the division titles actually, you know, meant something, Bart. So, yeah, and I could never understand why Herb Cole and Eddie Doucette, the longtime broadcaster of the Bucks. Great broadcaster. I think a lot of people, I mean, again, my age will remember Eddie Doucette doing the games. Eddie Doucette approached Herb Cole. He said, "Hey, Herb, what would you think about us doing a Bucks Hall of Fame? Just a Hall of Fame, a traveling Hall of Fame, something to honor the past teams." And that ownership wanted nothing to do with it. Nothing at all to do with it. And obviously this ownership, you walk around Fiserv Forum and you see things all the time regarding teams from the past and players from the past, and I think it's great.
It's like the Brewers do too much to talk about the 82 Brewers.
Yeah, the Bucks don't.
But the Bucks don't do enough to talk about those.
No, now they do.
80s teams.
And here's what doesn't make any sense. Okay, this new ownership here. Well, they've been around for 4 or 5 years now. This ownership, not even from Milwaukee, and they get the past.
Matt tweets in,
"How is it?" Was and he doesn't care.
Matt tweets in, "How is it that everyone who lives in Wisconsin knows all about those 82 Brewers, a team that lost the World Series, but no one almost knows nothing about a Bucks team that actually won a championship?"
Exactly.
The 71 Bucks, I know nothing about them.
Exactly. Exactly. See, the 71 Bucks would be like, I mean, like the 57 Braves.
Yeah, okay.
That's like our parents. Okay. I mean, I know all players of the team, but I was not even born. 71 Bucks, I was four, so I didn't see them play. But the 1977 through like 88 Bucks, God, those were constant contenders. And they were on, you know, you didn't have to worry about them not being on national TV. They were always on Sunday afternoon games on national TV, playing the Sixers or Lakers or Celtics or, you know, they were always one of the top games. This is back before cable TV. So, and then, you know, that era kind of came and went, and we'd never even talked about it. The 90s came, and it was like the 70s and 80s never existed under Herb Cole.
I remember when the NBA, they put a gold tab on the back of jerseys to signify if you've won a title, and the Bucks had this gold tab back there, and I'm like, what? Oh, that's right. They won a title back in 1971, which... Yeah. We never talk about. Mike is in Franklin, 799-1250. What's up, Mike?
Good morning, guys. I just want to say this has been a PR slam dunk from start to finish for the Bucks. Marcus Johnson should have been in the Bucks Hall of Fame and have had this number retired a long time ago. But I want to see this go taking another step and get this guy into the NBA Hall of Fame. Well-deserved, if you look at all the stats. What is it, a four-time All-Star, two-time first-team NBA defense, so on and so forth, and that's what I want to see. I want to see the guy in the Hall of Fame because he seems like a class act. You mentioned the little issues he has with Herb Cole. Give me a couple of guys that didn't have issues with Herb Cole. So let's get this guy into the Hall of Fame.
Oh, yeah. And I think Junior Bridgman kind of mentioned that yesterday. He said the next stop is the Basketball Hall of Fame. He should be in. He should be in. Yeah. I mean, if you can go to that list of guys, I mean, just on your own and see guys who are in the Hall of Fame, and you're saying, man, Marcus Johnson's not in that same category? I mean, you're telling me he's not, I mean, with all the great years that he put up, that he doesn't belong in the Hall of Fame? What? Should have won Rookie of the Year in 1978. He was jobbed out of that, but he should have won the Rookie of the Year. It went to Walter Davis, but Marcus should have won Rookie of the Year. But best team on one of the best teams in the NBA, best player on one of the best teams in the NBA for 7 or 8 years in a row. That says a lot.
John's in Brookfield, 799-1250. What's up, John?
Hey, just wanted to reaffirm what Chuck has said about the Bucks in the late 70s, 80s, and very early 90s, and that they were absolutely the toast of the town. And when you went to a game at the arena, you saw who's who was in Milwaukee. And if they were fortunate enough to have a ticket, that's world movers and shakers in Milwaukee right now. In contrast to what we had today, or at least up until this most recent success of the Bucks, how the Packers have seemed to have taken over the sports scene in Wisconsin and the state of Milwaukee, or in the city of Milwaukee, rather. The Packers, you know, I'm 69 years old, and I can remember catching on to the Packers very late in the 1950s and they were terrible. They had very little fan interest here in Milwaukee, and one cut in the 60s, and they seemed to take over the scene. The Braves had left town, and so there's been this evolution of fan interest and euphoria based upon the three major sports teams in the state of Wisconsin. It's been really kind of interesting to watch. It'll be interesting to see how long the Brewers can keep their interest going, but the Bucks certainly seem to be on good footing to keep it going for some time and have a nice run here.
Yeah, I would think so, too.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the Hall of Fame, really, any guys who are associated with the Bucks,
good call, John,
who are in the Hall of Fame, barely played here. I mean, you look at the guys like Oscar Robertson played three or four seasons with the Bucks. Jabbar played like six seasons with the Bucks. Ray Allen played here for a handful of seasons. It's not like nobody who's in the Hall of Fame had an extended period of time with the Bucks. They played here for a couple of seasons and then moved on to somewhere else, or like Oscar was at the end of his career.
It's Chuck and Winkler. Marcus Jersey's number, Marcus Johnson's jersey number 8 goes into the rafters. More from you guys, 414-799-1250. And then, how do we fix the Badgers? We'll get Ben Wergel's thoughts, 735. Chuck and Winkler on the Fan. Giannis Antetokounmpo not ready to think about if the 34 is ever going to go up there at Fiserv Forum. Chuck and Winkler, I'm Bart Winkler. That's Chuck Freeman. 414-799-1250. As we did see the number 8 lifted yesterday for Marcus Johnson, long time coming. Last play with the Bucks in 1984 and gets his jersey retired in 2019. Again, that's Chuck Freeman. I'm Bart Winkler. 414-799-1250. And we will talk to Ben Wergel coming up in about 10 minutes regarding what happened with the Badgers and what's next. Let's get back up to you guys, 799-1250. Let's go to Mike, who's in Brown Deer here on the Fan. What's up, Mike?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Hey, Mike.
Mike, what's up?
Hey, thank you for talking about bringing up the past. And people forget that the Bucks lost a 7-game series when they were in the Western Conference to the Boston Celtics. That was the year Lucius Allen slipped on the towel, hurt his knee, and they had to start Mickey Davis, and they end up losing the Celtics in 7. And I think people forget when Marcus, when the Bucks were still in the Western Conference, they went to the Eastern Finals, well, the Western Conference Finals against Seattle, and lost a close game to Seattle. So that was, you know, thank you guys. I appreciate it. Appreciate it so much.
Yeah, there was 2 years in a row when they were in the Western, I mean, toward the end of their days in the Western Conference, they got beat by Seattle with, you know, the Dennis Johnson group. And that was, I mean, one of those Seattle teams won the NBA title. But the Bucks, I mean, it's hard to believe that they were in the Western Conference at one time. But some of those playoff games, they'd start at like 10 o'clock Milwaukee time. And I remember staying up late, and I'm like 13 years old, 12 years old, and during eighth grade. And, you know, the Bucks are playing Seattle in the Western Conference Finals. And then they moved to the Eastern Conference, and then they started a rivalry with Boston and Philadelphia. But, man, they had some hard-fought series. And then one of them, I think Marcus's first year, they lost a 7-game or a 5-game series, not a 7-game series with Denver, with that David Thompson Nuggets team. So, yeah, the Bucks, you know, the Western Conference before they moved to the East. But, man, there were a lot of West Coast time zone games back then.
And then they had a stretch where they won their division 7 years in a row, right at the turn of the 80s, all the way up through 85, 86. And you look at what they did. 49 wins, 7-game loss in the conference semifinals. 60 wins in 81, and then they lost in 7 to the Sixers semifinals.
That was a heartbreaking game 7, I remember.
The next year, 55 wins, losing the conference semis again, game 6 to the Sixers. The next year, 51 wins, losing the conference finals to the Sixers in 5. The next year, this is the Bucks we're talking about, 83-84, 50 wins, lose to the Celtics in the conference finals. 84-85, 59 wins, losing the semis, get swept by the Sixers. And then the next year, 57 wins, conference finals, lose to the Celtics. It makes you think a little bit of today. If the Bucks put together a run like this today, where it's 7 straight division titles, 3 conference finals appearances in there, but no trips to the finals. I mean, I think we would look at that as a disappointment.
Mm-hmm.
You look back at how good that team was, and you wish for those teams that there was maybe maybe once in there they could just break through and win the finals, like if you rewrite history, so that I think the 80s Bucks, the early mid-80s Bucks, would get more love and attention than maybe they've gotten, because you'd have an NBA title to go with that.
Yeah, well, that 81 team that they lost in 7 to Philadelphia, there was some controversy in Game 7 there. They kind of got screwed on a call late on a 24-second clock. Philadelphia had the ball.
One of our teams got screwed on a call.
Oh, bad call.
Philadelphia?
Yeah, yeah. So that was on an Easter Sunday. I remember my 8th grade, and they lost on an Easter. I actually was watching that game in lacrosse because we were visiting relatives up there. And I saw we watched that game at a relative's house in Game 7 at Philly. It just was, because if they would have won, I think they would have won the NBA title that year. They would have played the Lakers, and they were a better team than the Lakers at the time. But yeah, there's so many,
very similar to 2001.
They just couldn't couldn't bust the door down on all those great teams that you're talking about right there. I mean, every one of those teams were championship level teams, and you know what took them to the next level. Is they ended up trading Kent Benson for Bob Lanier. And Lanier was an aging Lanier, but they needed a guy like that at the center spot. And they got him they gave up Kent Benson for Lanier, and it was a steal. And Lanier kind of took them to the next level, and they won division titles under Lanier, and they got far in the playoffs. So and Lanier, whose number is also up in the rafters at Fiserv Forum, who had his better days when he was with the Detroit Pistons, but he came here and still was a major contributor to the Bucks.
Say what you want about division titles, if they don't mean anything. I mean, I want them to mean something, but then I look and the Heat are leading their division and they're a game under 500. But since that run in the 80s, the Bucks have only won their division twice, and that was in 01 and this year.
Well, yeah, the practice facility.
Really,
you'd see all these division titles, 80, 81, 82, 83, 84, 86, 2001.
Yeah.
It's like, what happened there for 15 years?
And then another 18, and then they got it this year. Let's get out to Steve in Waukesha. What's up, Steve?
Hey, guys. Thanks for the memories this morning. I go way back to the expansion season when players were taken off of other teams to make up the Bucks, and I saw Lenny Chappell play. I saw Wayne the Wall Embry play, Flynn Robinson, and a year or two later, they got Lou Alcindor, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar in the player draft, number one pick. So I've been going down to the arena for a long time, and you used to be able to get in, believe it or not. They used to have some off games where the teams weren't all that great. They were called Buck Nights. You'd get in for $1. And you'd end up close to the flag up on top of the wall in your seat. You were way up there, but at least you could get into the place. And as a 20-year-old at that time, a dollar for a game of basketball, pro ball, was the way to go.
Yeah, I mean, those seats were way up high at the arena. Now, today, if you go up there, it's not bad. But back then, it looked like it was you were like sitting up in heaven.
Oh, you bet.
Yeah.
And you guys probably remember, or maybe you don't, Eddie Doucette had a nickname for every single player.
Oh, absolutely. Eddie, and I've been meaning to try to get Eddie on the show sometime. We'll get him on. He's living out in California. Good guy. I liked Eddie. And, you know, he's associated with those 70s and 80s Bucks. He was the play-by-play guy.
Steve, thanks for that memory, 799-1250.
One thing about those 70s and 80s Bucks that Marcus played on, none of the home games were on TV. You know, they didn't show home games on TV, and they showed selected road games. Now every game's on TV. But the only time you'd see a home game on TV is if they played a Sunday afternoon nationally televised game on CBS, who had the NBA rights back then. But you'd never – home games weren't allowed to be shown on TV. The Brewers, too. But the Bucks, you only saw them play maybe 15 times a year, and that's when they were on the road on Channel 18.
You know, all this trip down memory lane, it leads me to ask you, what's your favorite memory of the Bradley Center?
Again?
You can see inside it now.
What's that?
You can see inside.
Oh, you can. You know, it's funny because from the Fiserv Forum, on when you're on the south side of the place, when you look out that window, you can just see.
You can see like the seats.
You can see the bones.
I mean,
you can see the bones.
It looks like it got bombed. Like, yeah. It looks like a war zone.
Oh, it does, yeah.
And what's taking so long to rip it down?
Well, that's what I was wondering last time.
Just take it down already?
When I was at the Philly game a couple weeks ago, I was like, how is this? I mean, there's a little piece of rubble here and here. It's like, how's it taking so long to move that? I don't remember County Stadium taking that long.
I mean,
it's is there some bad things in that place that they're afraid to touch?
They're going to fly over during the playoffs on ABC, and you're going to see this just like rock sitting
take it
there.
Down. Take it down already.
Take down the Bradley
Center. Pfizer Forum is fine. We're going to play in there. We don't need a backup spot.
Yeah, the temp period's over. We're good. It's Chuck and Winkler, served up by Perkins, where you can get the $9.99 burger combo served with fries and a slice of pie, whether it's the Tangler Burger, whether it's the Classic Cheeseburger, whether it's the SoCal Turkey Burger. These are thick, juicy patties piled high with everything you want on there. The breakfast burger, guys, it's got the patty and then, like, breakfast right on top of it. A fried egg, hash browns, applewood smoked bacon, cheddar cheese, all right there for you. And you get burgers and then the fries and then a slice of pie. So the main course, a side, and a dessert, all for $9.99. And, hey, today's a Pie Society Monday, so go after 11 o'clock, and then you get a free slice of pie with your meal so you can double up the pie today. That's at Perkins all throughout the Milwaukee area. No Badgers last night after their loss to Oregon, so no Badgers the rest of the tournament, and maybe no Badgers in the tournament for a while if your fears on the future of the program are any indication. We'll talk to Ben Wergel, Badger Nation, on Twitter. What's your favorite Eric Kratz memory? You want to do that later today?
I was sad to see this.
Pitcher traded to the Giants.
God, I was sad. I was sad to see this. It just shows you how cruel sports can be.
We can talk about that a little later. It's Chuck and Winkler, served up by Perkins. We'll hit that before 8. 105.7 FM, The Fan. The Badgers. What's your favorite 2018-2019 Badgers memory?
Oh, I have a... I probably could come up with more Kratz ones than I can the Badgers.
Ben Wergel joins us here on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline, BadgersInsider.com, on Twitter at the Badger Nation. Benny, not a good weekend for the Badgers, to say it lightly. They do not get into the next round of games as Oregon takes care of them. How you doing this morning?
I'm fine. How are you guys?
I'm doing all right. You know, I mean, both the high division ones in the state are done. With Wisconsin here, I mean, not getting by the first round, I think we all agreed they didn't have much of a shelf life anyway. But, I mean, just to have that type of performance they did against Oregon, and Oregon won again last night. They looked pretty good in beating a good Irvine team. But still, Wisconsin just getting hammered like they did last Friday.
Yeah, and I think you'd be foolish if you say you didn't see this coming, because this has kind of been in the works since pretty much the beginning of February. You know, after this team knocked off Maryland, which was 21st at the time on February 1, they were 16-6, and they really had positioned themselves to win a lot of games in the month of March, the rest of the month, positioned themselves to win a share of the conference title. But, you know, in the final 12 games, UW's offense struggled mightily, and it's largely because the three-point shot disappeared. I mean, you look at the numbers, the first 22 games of the year, this team shot 40.3% from three-point range. And then from that point forward, they shot 27.7% from the perimeter. And you had a number of players just go into these deep shooting lulls they're never able to shake themselves out of. Dimitri Trice, Brad Davison especially, those two really, really struggled both against Michigan State in the Big Ten Championship game against Oregon. Both were under 25%. Down the stretch here. And when your offense is predicated on making perimeter shots to open up the lane for Ethan Happ to get one-on-one coverage or double-teamed, and for then him to pass the ball out of the post to set up your offense that way, when half of that doesn't work, your offense is just going to grind to a halt. And that's really what it did the last two games of the year, which were the only two times the Badgers really got blown out. I mean, their first nine games, they lost by single digits, but Michigan State, they looked bad, and then that second half against Oregon, they just let everything slip away from them.
If Greg Gard could, like, magically go back in time to the beginning of the season and try to play things out differently, do you think there's something that he could do to get more out of this group of guys, or is this a first-round exit? Is that the inevitable outcome for the team that he's assembled?
It's a good question. I don't know what what more he could have done differently, because this roster kind of is what it is, so to speak. And, you know, Wisconsin's still recovering a little bit from some recruiting struggles that they had right around the time when Bo retired. And the problem was is that the uncertainty of when Bo was going to retire and a lack of scholarships really kind of handcuffed this school, that they really couldn't build off the momentum they had of going back-to-back Final Fours. You know, after, you know, the second Final Four, they only had one scholarship to work with. And it's hard to really make a huge impact when you only have one scholarship, and you need to take a point guard in that class. You need to find Bronte King's heir apparent. And that's, you know, part of the reason why a lot of people are upset with recruiting is that Wisconsin never offered Sam Hauser, who was an extremely talented player at Stevens Point, but he didn't play the position that Wisconsin desperately needed in their class. And by not taking Sam Hauser, you don't really get a good crack at Joey Hauser, and then it kind of, you know, snowballed from there for Wisconsin, where they really struggled to find a point guard. They really targeted Peyton Pritchard, and you could see why on Friday they targeted him, but, you know, that really was a struggle too after he kind of blew up and got these big scholarship offers. And recruiting really hasn't fully recovered, I don't think, from that. And so that's why this offseason will be big when Wisconsin's out recruiting. They have a number of scholarships available for 2020 to try to find some playmakers that could help this roster. But kind of getting back to the original question, you look at how this roster is, it's still a lot of young players on it. I mean, this was Brad Davidson's first NCAA tournament. Demetri Trites missed all but 10 games last year. Kobe King missed all 10 games last year, his first NCAA tournament. Nate Reavers, his first real stretch run as a featured guy in this offense. So this is still a very young team centered around some seniors who were good, but also had their limitations. Ethan Happ can't play outside 10 feet of the basket. Cole Iverson really didn't find his offense till late. And Charles Thomas, I think you could label as a bust for Wisconsin, really didn't deliver much. The only thing maybe you could have seen him doing differently, guard, is maybe using Pritzel a little bit more in certain situations. But again, Brevin Pritzel is a liability defensively compared to some of the other players on the roster. So I don't think guard could have done too much different with this team. I think this team just went into a shooting slump it couldn't find its way out of.
Just feels like there's some program slippage from the Bo Ryan days, you know, 2015. When they went to the NBA, or when they went to the NCAA finals and got beat by Duke, but since then it's been a slow decline. I know they got back to the tournament. They even finished fourth in the Big Ten this year. You know, a damn good conference. But still, I'm just my feeling. The eye test is program slippage.
Well, if you make it to the national championship game, anything less than that would be considered a decline.
Well, no, I'm saying from that whole run, there was a nice 10-year run there where, you know, they were, I think, top 10 team, top 15 team on a regular basis. They're not that program anymore.
Yeah, well, you also got really, really lucky with your recruiting, too. I mean, you hit the money with Sam Decker and Bronson Koenig, two in-state players who were huge. Nigel Hayes developed into a very good player for Wisconsin, more so in the role player aspect, I would say. And then you hit the lottery with Frank Kaminsky. That doesn't happen all the time. All the pieces need to fall into place, and you need to have the right matchups to in March. I mean, you look at their last, you know, you look at the two tournament runs before this. Notre Dame, they were in position to win that game until some careless turnovers cost them a shot at the Elite Eight. The next year, Florida has a game winner at the buzzer in overtime to win that game and send Wisconsin packing. So you're two heartbreakers away from making the Elite Eight and potentially going back to the Final Four. 2 years ago was a case of graduation from so many key pieces, Koenig, Zach Showalter, Hayes, injuries to two of your key guards in Trice and King, and just the lack of chemistry, just all of those things kind of made it a bad season, a rare season. It was Wisconsin's first losing season in over 20 years. But then this year, I think, and I wrote about this on BadgersInsider.com, kind of my takeaway from the season, this season was a step back in the right direction. You know, they finished top four in a Big Ten conference that was really good from top to bottom. There were really no bad teams in the Big Ten this year. You get back to the NCAA tournament. You beat a number of quality teams earlier in the year that put yourself in position to finish as a fifth seed in the NCAA tournament. But the end result this year should not be satisfactory for the Wisconsin program and Wisconsin fans in years to come. If we're at this point next year and we're talking about a 23-11 team and a team that was bounced in the first round of the NCAA tournament and a team that relied too much on the perimeter shot and didn't do enough to get to the free throw line, make free throws, attack the rim, kind of diversify your offense, then that's going to be a problem. And then it's going to be a situation where Wisconsin is kind of treading the water a little bit. They're stuck in neutral. And then you have to question some long-term visions of this program. I don't think we're at that point yet, but I do think we're at a very important point in time with Wisconsin basketball. I don't want to call it a crossroads, but that's kind of what it feels like. Wisconsin can use this season as a step forward and then make a bigger run and start building back towards where Wisconsin was just a couple years ago. Because every program goes through these dips, or they're going to continue to sidestep or even take a step back next year, and then that's going to be a problem, and that's going to bring up some, well, what else needs to be done besides player personnel that can kind of fix this.
Talking with Ben Wergel, BadgersInsider.com. He's on Twitter at the Badger Nation. I feel like when this happens in basketball and when it happens in football, the conversation is, well, recruiting, they got to recruit better, academic standards, you can't recruit in the state, et cetera, et cetera. And then it's like a hot button issue for a day, and then it goes away again. Is there a bigger problem with recruiting that they can't recruit well enough guys in the state, that academic standards need to be lowered, or are we just going to keep doing this cycle over and over again?
No, I don't buy the academic standard argument. I never have. I mean, you look at the success of Wisconsin football and basketball over the last 20 years with the amount of bowl appearances and NCAA tournament appearances. They can recruit quality players. They have for a long time. This school has never been predicated on getting that one star player and letting him take control. It's always about building a good, solid team around it. I mean, if Wisconsin doesn't go to the Final Fours with just Frank Kaminsky, if they don't have Sam Decker or they don't have a Josh Gosser, I mean, it's all the big part of the equation. And if you can recruit those type of players and get those type of players in school, high academic, smart kids, good basketball players, you're fine. The academic standards, it's such a boring argument. It's such a lazy argument when people bring that up because it just doesn't hold water. It doesn't. You can find good quality basketball players who are good academic students and get them into Wisconsin. Wisconsin should not bend or break their academic rules for a diamond stone type player, someone who is a very good prep basketball player, but maybe has questions academically. I don't buy that argument, and I don't think people should.
Benny, 16 teams left starting on Thursday. Obviously Duke got tested yesterday, but I mean, yeah. I don't know if you still like them or not, or if you even did, but who do you like to be the survivor of these days?
Yeah, I mean, you look at this tournament so far, I think I looked all the ones advanced, all the twos, all the threes, two fours, a five, and then the 12 out of the Wisconsin pod. I mean, it's been a very chalky tournament, but still you've had a lot of close calls. Virginia hasn't looked all that great. Kentucky survived a close call. You have to feel good for Tyler Hero, making some key defensive plays in that game to get him into the Sweet 16. Duke certainly one little roll the other way, and then Duke's out of this tournament. This kind of goes to show you how brutal this tournament can be. You know, Duke is the overwhelming favorite, you know, barely survives the first weekend. So there's going to be some really good games coming up here. You know, Michigan's going to be tested. Michigan State is going to be tested. You know, Texas Tech looks really, really strong. LSU is obviously playing with a chip on their shoulder with their coach indefinitely suspended. I still like the one seeds here, and I think Kentucky has a great chance to get out of their region, make the Final Four. So my bracket still looks pretty good shape. I have the three number ones in Kentucky going in, and that's what I'm going to be sticking with.
Milwaukee has hosted first and second round games many, many times. They got one, again, coming up in a couple of years. Wisconsin, about 15 years ago, hosted a Sweet 16, which I thought was pretty cool. They had the two games on a Friday and then the one game, the regional final, on a Sunday. How come it's never come back to Madison? I mean, we've had them here in Milwaukee, but has there been ever talk about Madison? Because I thought they did a great job hosting it.
No, there hasn't. And someone brought that up on Twitter to me earlier last week too. I can't see Wisconsin ever being in the mix to hold a regional. I don't think that the Kohl Center is big enough. Seats around 17,000. The hotel situation, they probably could get away with, but maybe a first or second round, but I don't believe they have bid for those. I think they are content with Milwaukee.
Because they just 15 years ago they hosted. I mean, the times have changed where it's outgrown Madison.
Well, I think part of it, too, is that if Madison would bid and they would get it, then Wisconsin wouldn't be able to be seated in Madison. And so would you like, if you're Wisconsin, because there's only so many Midwest regions, because they like to spread them out in the west, east, the south. If Wisconsin has a really good year, there's a great chance for them to be seated in Milwaukee. And you saw what that did for them back in 2014 when they were down against Duke in the first half and had that big comeback behind the home crowd. I don't know if it's really a strong desire for the University of Wisconsin to host. I think they're fine with Milwaukee and the other surrounding regions hosting, and that's just not really something they've heavily pursued. They've done it in hockey. Mm-hmm. They've hosted the hockey Frozen Four, ironically in Tampa, of all places. They were the host for it. But it's just one of those things where it's just not high on their priority list as of now.
Ben, appreciate it. You can find Ben on Twitter at the Badger Nation, BadgersInsider.com. We'll talk again soon, my friend.
Thanks, Ben.
All right, take care, guys.
Ben Wergel joins us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. Great Midwest Bank, looking to buy, build, renovate, or refinance in 2019. Look no further and call Great Midwest Bank today. Great Midwest Bank, providing simply local common sense lending to your community since 1935. We will say goodbye to Eric Kratz and Trevon Duvall, and a former Packer, shall I say, legend, has a new home, Jeff Janis. We'll talk about that coming up just after 8 o'clock.
All right, the first and second round, people get into this really a lot. Like the first and second round, I took a couple of days off. And then it seems like interest drops as they get to the third, as they get to the Sweet 16, third and fourth round. See, it gets even more. I mean, I can't wait for these games coming up Thursday and Friday and then the regional finals this weekend. Are you one of those guys that after the first and second round, maybe your pool's busted, that you kind of like, oh, okay. Marquette, Wisconsin's not in it. You kind of lose some interest?
Well, I think why a lot of people like the tournament, especially Thursday and Friday, isn't because they're college basketball fans. It's because there's an activity and there's a lot of it. And it's always on, and you can watch it from start to finish, and you might be entertained along the way. So I don't think anything lives up to the height of Thursday and Friday, and there's games in the day, and that's fun too. It's an all-day event. I am excited for the games coming up this weekend. I think a lot of people should be. Again, unless you were really done with your bracket and took just all upsets, I mean, this is a tournament where the top seeds are advancing. Oregon is a 12. They are the one double-digit seed left. Otherwise, you're going to be in for a lot of good games on Thursday and then Friday night. Florida State-Gonzaga is going to be a good one to start things off on Thursday. As Ben mentioned, Michigan and Texas Tech should be a good one. Friday, you got LSU and Michigan State. Auburn and North Carolina is going to be really good. Houston and Kentucky, I'm really excited for. So I think because the first weekend was a little blah, I think it's only going to make Thursday and Friday and then, the Final Four and Elite Eight that much better. So I probably am more excited this year than in years past because you still have a lot of the big dogs remaining.
I'm looking forward to North Carolina-Auburn just for the fast pace of it and just watching Auburn play, but also, too, for how it's going to be on set because Kenny Smith and Charles Barkley, they're talking about wearing their jerseys on the set. And I think those guys... I think they take a lot of criticism because they're NBA guys, but I think the entertainment value that they provide to these broadcasts, outstanding.
I like watching how annoyed Clark Kellogg seems during.
I know.
It seems like he's at someone else's party.
I know.
Like, he wants to break down the games, and all Charles is doing is talking about Kenny's just making fun of Charles, and Ernie's loving it, and Clark Kellogg's like, I want to break down Murray State and Florida State, guys. No interest.
Well, because Clark went from like the number one analyst with Jim Nance to in the studio, and it was just Greg Gumbel and Clark for many years, and then they expanded it and they added Ernie, and then they put Charles and Kenny, and now Clark is kind of like the odd man out.
Yeah, it seems like he walked into the wrong party, and he's just going to ride it out. It's Chuck and Winkler, served up by Perkins Restaurant and Bakeries. Eric Kratz giving Brewer fans a lot of reason to celebrate. No longer. They trade him. We'll have an update on what he gets in return. And I am going to tease a Jeff Janis update for you because it looks like he is out of football. What he's doing next is Chuck and Winkler on The Fan.
Miss something on The Fan?
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.